Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the APM Human Services International FY22 results conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Megan Wynne. Please go ahead.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us today for our FY22 results presentation. My name is Megan Wynne, and I'm the founder and executive chair of APM. I'm joined today by Michael Angi, our group CEO, Steve Fewster, our CFO, and Matt Cooper, our GM of investor relations. I'd like to start by welcoming you as shareholders and thanking you for your support of APM. Today we'll take you through the FY22 year, the highlights, a business overview, our financial performance, and in closing, the outlook for the future. But before we begin, I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we live. We pay our respects to elders past and present of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nations. Globally, APM recognises the significance of Indigenous peoples' communities and the role they play within our own workforce and the world.
Thank you, Megan. The people we support are facing more challenges than ever. As a business, we continue to positively and sustainably impact the lives of those we support. We enable better lives every day. Slide 5 illustrates the key data points and our organisational alignment to the UN Sustainable Development Goals. The impact of the work we do is evident in the data, supporting 639,000 people in their employment goals, supporting 40,000 ex-offenders with reintegration into their communities, delivering therapy services to more than 10,000 children to assist with their development and mental delays. The work we do changes the trajectory of our clients and their families' lives, and this has a positive impact on society. Diversity and inclusion is embedded in the DNA of APM, whether this be in terms of female representation on our board, our senior leadership and team, and inclusion in terms of Indigenous peoples and LGBTQIA+ team members. We're excited that Paralympian Ellie Cole has joined us as an ambassador to promote inclusivity and support our people and clients. From a global perspective, as a company, we decided we could make a real contribution to support the refugees from Ukraine, largely women and children. And our German team have been providing pro bono assistance to support their resettlement by securing housing, childcare, employment and health services. Our annual report will outline more about our ESG commitment and activities.
I'm delighted to report that FY22 has been another exceptional year where we have delivered strong financial and operational results whilst navigating the challenging operating environment of COVID-19. As founder and a shareholder, I'm extremely happy with our FY22 performance, the resilience and adaptability of our people, and the singular focus on enabling better lives, which has ultimately delivered these strong results. I'd like to thank my fellow board members, our group CEO, Mike Angi, and our senior executive team for guiding us through this complex environment. Importantly, I'd like to thank APM's 10,300 team members across our 11 countries for their unwavering commitment to the 1.1 million clients we have supported this year. From a business perspective, APM has a long history of delivering on its promises, and I'm pleased to say that this has continued as a listed company. And as you will hear today and see in the coming months, we're executing our strategy as outlined in the prospectus. Not only did our teams deliver strong financial performance in FY22, exceeding our prospectus earnings forecast, we also executed on our strategy to expand the depth and breadth of our service offering, both organically and via strategic acquisitions, ensuring we have a strong future. In FY22, we completed 9 strategic acquisitions, providing a platform for future growth and investing in the fast-growing sectors of allied health, disability and aged care. During the year, we entered an 11th country through the acquisition of Clustera in Sweden, a market that is transforming and growing. And as promised, we won the largest award in the new Workforce Australia contract and successfully implemented the Restart contract in the United Kingdom. All of this was done on top of a successful IPO and a debt refinancing to provide a strong financial foundation for future growth. On that note, I now pass to Mike and Steve to go through the financial results and business. And if you could please turn to slide 7.
Thanks, Megan. As you can see from slide 7, FY22 has been another strong year for APM. The financial results demonstrated the strength and resilience of the APM business and its people, and the ability of the business to adapt to the operating environment in local markets. Whilst we had to navigate the challenges caused by the COVID-19 pandemic across our operations globally and maintain operations, the business outperformed its prospectus earnings forecast for FY22. This is a credit to the leadership team and our people across our business who collaborated with stakeholders, ensured we continued to deliver support to our clients that needed us most, and kept our team safe throughout. At a high level from a financial perspective, pro forma NPATA was $166.3 million, up 29% on FY21 and 7% above prospectus forecasts. Pro forma EBITDA was $308 million, up 31% on FY21 and 5% above prospectus forecast. Pro forma operating cash flow was $281.9 million, up 25% on FY21 and 11% above prospectus forecast. And we're pleased to confirm our inaugural dividend as a publicly listed company, being a fully franked dividend of 5 cents per share. Steve and I will discuss more about performance and financials throughout the next few slides. Turning to slide 8, whilst the listing took a lot of energy and effort, pre and post, as Megan said, APM has continued to execute on its long-term growth strategy. As per our planning processes, we set ourselves goals for FY22 and beyond, and from an executive perspective, we delivered on our goals and exceeded them, with major contract awards being Workforce Australia and implementing Restart, re-tenders where we re-won Singapore, South Korea, and residential aged care assessments. Strategic acquisitions, completing 9 strategic acquisitions, continue to build a platform for the future. And we'll cover details of these in the coming segment slides. Over the next few slides, I'll go through each operating region and then pass to Steve to discuss more detail on group financials. Moving to slide 10, globally COVID-19 and particular Omicron impacted absenteeism and operations. And as a result, not all our businesses performed to expectations or capacity. It's fair to say that disruption caused by COVID-19 has had a negative impact on the financial performance across the business. We've continued to invest in talent to support our growth, including recruiting 19 senior leaders during the year across all areas. And from a cost inflation perspective, the services we deliver are generally subject to regular pricing adjustments from a market or contract perspective. And this does provide us with some protection on inflation. If we move to slide 11, please. From an Australian perspective, it was another strong year, with the business outperforming at a revenue and NPATA level for the full year. Employment services continued to perform well throughout the year. We continued to deliver strong contract performance as demonstrated by our star ratings and contract awards. In terms of caseloads, unemployment levels are higher than pre-pandemic. And as highlighted last week in the Australian newspaper, whilst 473,000 Australians are reported as unemployed, there are 892,000 people receiving job seeker and youth allowance payments. In addition to this cohort, there are more than 700,000 working age Australians in receipt of the disability support pension and many other Australians on other benefits. There is still much to be done to support unemployed and underemployed Australians, and the newly elected Labor government are committed to doing this. The APM team managed the wind down of the Job Active contract, which was disruptive given the scale of change across the sector. And given their experience in large contract mobilisations, have set up the Workforce Australia contract for success, with all sites fully operational on 1 July. As is the APM way, we performed well to the end of the Job Active contract whilst recruiting and getting ready for the new program. In terms of Workforce Australia, we set ourselves a goal of increasing market share and being the market leader. We achieved this, winning 13% of contracts, expanding to 34 regions with 72 contracts in total, and moving to a clear market-leading position. Importantly, we focused on ensuring we prepared for the startup well, opening 32 new sites, recruiting 500 people, and being open for clients on day one of the contract in all regions and sites. In Disability Employment Services, we also continue to improve our star ratings, where we're now at 3.984 stars at the last rating as at March 2022. The recent Disability Employment Services announcement of the reallocation of clients away from poor performers saw 52 providers lose contracts and 8 lose their entire business. Due to our high performance, APM retained all its contracts and clients. The government announcement was very clear in terms of removing poor performers and the important role good performers play in the sector, and that they wish to divert the 15,500 job seekers to strong providers. We'll be very focused on supporting these job seekers coming to APM in the coming weeks. Across health, disability and aged care, these businesses were negatively impacted during the year due to COVID-19 related absenteeism and the ability to provide face-to-face services. We continue to build scale in these businesses and seek strategic opportunities that will support the long-term strategy. The second half result, as expected, was lower than the first half in Australia due to the impact of COVID-19 and in particular the Omicron strain and opening of borders on absenteeism across all businesses, the wind down of the JobActive contract, the transition to Workforce Australia, investment in the integration of acquisitions and the associated costs, and investment in corporate services to support growth. Overall, the business in Australia is well placed going into FY23 and beyond, with the Workforce Australia program commencement, Disability Employment Services business reallocation, the increased market share in residential aged care assessments where we've gone from 23% to 29%, and the increase in scale, investment and focus on optimising performance in health and emerging areas of disability and aged care. Turning to slide 12, FY22 was a transformational year for the European business, where the team was able to execute well on a combination of new contracts, recommencing existing ones, and continue to win new business. During the year, we successfully implemented the Restart contract from a standing start. We recruited 1,000 team members and opened 25 sites across central London and Greater Manchester. The team did an amazing job mobilising the contract to match the required capacity in the UK market. The contract is performing well, and whilst referral volume took time to scale in the first half, the contract now has more stable volumes at levels in line with our expectations. During the year, we recommenced a youth program and adapted the service to suit the changed market conditions, and we continue to rebuild the justice business with new contracts following the end of the parole contract in FY21. In Germany, we've continued to open new sites in line with client demand and win smaller regional contracts. And in January 2022, we entered the Swedish market through the acquisition of Costera. And we'll continue to build scale in this expanding market, where we expect market size to grow from $500 million Australian to $800 million, and see the continued adoption of the Australian Employment Services model of performance, outcomes and star ratings. North America is a key growth market for APM, and as you can see from slide 13, during FY22 it continued to grow, and with the full year operation of the Ontario prototype in the Peel region, the full year contribution from the DWFS acquisition and contract wins expanding our presence to 24 states. The Ontario employment services market continues to progressively go to tender, and we were successful in the phase one tender winning the York region. And now we operate in 2 of 6 regions awarded to date. Whilst overall margins are lower in the North American market and in particular US marketplace, there is lower variability in performance and a more stable operating environment, hence the nature of the contracts being generally cost plus or known margin. During FY22, we performed well and continued to deliver strong contract performance and expansion, which led to the outperformance during the year. And we'll continue to look for opportunities to build scale and diversify in this market in future years. Turning to slide 14, Asia-Pac was the region for APM most impacted by COVID-19, disrupting client referrals and operations. During the period, we maintained our talent and won important re-tenders in Singapore and South Korea. However, margin was impacted by lower revenue and maintaining the cost base of the business and the talent pool. Whilst the market continues to improve, we believe it will take time to normalise and reach full potential. I'll now pass to Steve to go through group financials.
Thanks, Mike. If I get you to turn to slide 16, please. which provides a summary of our P&L. During FY22, revenue grew by $314 million to $1.33 billion. 57% of this growth came organically and the balance from acquisitions. This revenue growth was achieved despite the conclusion of the UK parole contract in FY21. This contract formed part of our communities and assessment service line. As Mike said earlier, our FY22 pro forma EBITDA increased by 31% compared to FY21 and finished ahead of our prospectus forecast. EBITDA margins year on year remain unchanged at 23.1%. Net financing costs decreased by $37 million in FY22 following the conversion of shareholder loans to equity as part of the IPO and the $160 million pay down of debt in November last year. Going forward, our interest expense is expected to further reduce following the refinance of our debt facilities in July 22. The margin saving on the new facilities compared to the TLB structure delivers a pre-tax saving of $15 million annually. The effective tax rate for the year was 22%, including the utilisation of previously unrecognised tax losses. Assuming the geographic earnings mix remains the same in future years, we expect to see the effective tax rate trend towards 25%. If I can please ask you to look at slide 17. Following a year where we mobilised a number of new contracts, listed the company and completed 9 acquisitions, the balance sheet as outlined on slide 17 is considerably different. Some of the key movements in the year included a $17 million derivative, which is a foreign exchange contract that we put in place in preparation for the July 22 refinancing and is now closed out. Our working capital increased with the new contracts and the acquisitions that we made. Our intangibles have also increased off the back of the acquisitions. And finally, debt has decreased with the conversion of the shareholder loans into equity and the $160 million repayment of the TLBs. It is very pleasing to finish the year with a strong balance sheet where our leverage ratio is 1.7 times pro forma EBITDA. In July 22, following strong interest from the debt market, we successfully replaced our $590 million TLB facility with an $840 million syndicated multi-currency revolving corporate facility. The refi has delivered a 240 basis point saving, provided a spread in our debt maturities while retaining our flexible covenants. This facility delivers the capacity and flexibility to confidently pursue our growth opportunities. We are proud of the fact that this is the first corporate facility in Australia that has been recognised as a social loan. This recognition shows the social contribution that APM makes within each of the countries that we operate. Turning to slide 18. APM continued to be highly cash generative in FY22, where we delivered pro forma operating cash flow of $281.9 million, which was up 25% on FY21. Cash conversion was 92%, reflecting a working capital increase of $15 million that was predominantly occurred in H2. During the period, we invested $207 million in acquisitions and a further $40 million in CapEx for the contract mobilisations and IT projects within the business. I'll now hand back to Mike.
Thanks, Steve. For the next few slides, we'll change our focus to FY23 and beyond, and I'll pass to Megan to discuss the current market conditions.
As we can see from slide 20, the macro trends that underpin APM's long-term growth remain, albeit exacerbated by the impacts of COVID-19. Today, the world faces the most challenging social and economic outlook in 50 years, with those facing hardship or harm requiring our services more than ever. In employment services, the major drivers impacting labour markets globally are digitisation, decarbonisation and demographic change. This rapidly changing world of work will displace workers, many of them older. And to avoid increasing unemployment, inequality and societal tension, governments must implement policy to support this transition and its impact. And as such, we expect to see more programs like those we run in Singapore and South Korea to support this transition. The disability and aged care sectors are also expected to grow significantly. In Australia, the National Disability Insurance Scheme is the largest human services-related social reform since Medicare. APM is well positioned to leverage our allied health and disability employment services experience to expand our service provision in a world of client choice. We continue to build upon our platform acquisitions of Early Start Australia, LifeCare, MyIntegra and Mobility. The Royal Commission into Aged Care, Quality and Safety has increased the focus on delivering higher quality care for older Australians, with increased funding to enable older people to remain in their homes. Our ambition is to be the market-leading provider at scale in these markets, servicing all Australians no matter where they live. And with respect to healthcare, the last 2 years of the pandemic has resulted in continuous stress on health systems as they struggle to deal with both the acute care and longer-term physical and mental health deterioration associated with COVID-19. COVID is costing the economy, with the Lancet reporting this month that long COVID is affecting 1 in 8 people. Increasing lifespan also drives the longer-term demand for services, including allied health, community care and employment services. APM is well positioned to respond to this transformation that is taking place in the health industry, from illness to health and wellbeing, from provider-centric to person-centric, from generic to more personalised care. We continue to build a healthcare business that understands how client and customer needs are changing and develop service delivery models that can be scaled across international markets. APM provides critical support for our clients as they progress toward employment, recover from injury or illness, and live their best lives with a disability or as they age. I'll now pass to Mike, and if you could please turn to slide 21.
Thanks, Megan. To maintain societal cohesion and reduce inequality, governments support those people in our communities that require additional assistance to maintain and sustainably improve their lives. And whilst there's intrinsic social benefit in doing this, that's embedded in doing good for all and not leaving people behind, there's also a real financial benefit, as illustrated on this slide. Across our business, the services we provide deliver a significant return for our customers and a positive impact in the lives of the clients we support. In Australia, the total lifetime cost of future welfare payments to working age welfare recipients is estimated at 33 times the annual average welfare payment of $11,500 in FY18, and this amount has only increased during the pandemic. As such, supporting someone who is a welfare recipient into secure, sustainable health and employment has a massive return to taxpayers in terms of social security payments, however, also has a tremendous social benefit. In the UK, the last public review of employment programs was the Work Program in 2018, where for every pound spent on the program, the return was 4.51 times. In Australia, research showed that for every dollar an organisation spends on effective workplace mental health, the return was $2.30. And in the rehabilitation space, there's a return of between 28 and 32 times the money spent on effective rehabilitation. Finally, during the pandemic, Queensland University did an assessment on the return of the Disability Employment Services Program during this time and estimated the return was $3 for every dollar invested in the program. So there is a significant economic and social benefit from the services we provide, and strong performance and outcomes by organisations like APM are critical to delivering this return. Turning to slide 22, we believe that APM is well placed to achieve strong growth in the years to come, and there are a number of key factors that position us, led by a client-centric approach, focus on individual needs when delivering services, and commitment to performance. For APM, it starts with its people. Their experience in the sector, our executive and over a third of our team are shareholders. We continue to invest in the talent we need for the future, and we have aligned values and a common purpose that drives consistency and maintenance of a strong culture, even during these challenging times. Collaborative and trusted relationships with our stakeholders is important to our business, and they're built on the foundation of delivering strong contract performance and outcomes for our clients. Working in partnerships is a key to our success. We continue to invest in our systems to enable our people to deliver better services and outcomes and to ensure they maintain the highest standards of compliance. Performance is everything in our sector and is a key barrier to entry, as having a track record of strong performance and delivering outcomes is what makes a positive, sustainable impact for clients, communities, and provides a return for stakeholders. APM is a performance organisation, and the Disability Employment Services Star Ratings, as illustrated, are one method of measuring performance in contracts and shows how we differentiate ourselves from others, with a star rating of 3.984 times being 30% above market average. As can be seen in FY22, we have a nimble operating model and ability to adapt to changing operating conditions. During the year, we recruited key talent to start up two large contracts, Restart 1,000 people and Workforce Australia 500 people, and we did this on time and budget. In terms of macro themes of inflation and labour shortages, our recent recruitment is a live example of being able to maintain our cost structures and attract talent. Whilst we're not immune from inflation, as mentioned earlier, the services we provide have periodic price reviews from a market or contract perspective, which provides support for our business financially. And finally, while we're a large global company, we bring the best of APM globally to solve local issues. What happens in every local market is what is important to the clients we support and stakeholders we serve. And our local focus and investment is what sets us apart. All of these factors support our growth looking forward. If we move to slide 23, please. Our business has a strong foundation of existing and new contracts to mobilise, opportunities in health, disability and aged care, and contributions from strategic acquisitions that support growth into FY23 and beyond, including in Workforce Australia, Workforce Australia Disability Employment Services reallocations, where there's 15,500 clients that potentially can come to organisations such as APM. Residential aged care assessments, where we've increased our market share to 29%, and contributions from acquisitions and scale and productivity in health, disability and aged care. In Europe, we have the full year of the Restart contract, continued execution on new justice contracts and investing in Sweden. In North America, we start the new Ontario Phase 1 contract in York region and the veterans contract in Canada in January 23. And we have the contribution from acquisitions and contract wins in the USA. And in Asia Pac, the market's recovering over time from COVID-19 disruptions, and we're seeing more opportunities in markets such as South Korea as the market opens and outplacement reaches full potential. Looking forward, you'll see us continue to invest in health, disability and aged care, build scale in employment services, and invest in talent to continue to drive sustainable growth. From an acquisitions perspective, we have a strong pipeline under review, and we'll continue to invest where we see opportunity to build scale or enter a new market or service area and add long-term value to shareholders. Every day we continue to pursue our tender pipeline and have invested more in our capability in this area to assess new markets and opportunities and support our core businesses. Our pipeline is stronger than it's ever been, including continuing to assess the functional assessments market in the UK, which has increased in size now in terms of tender, the local area coordinator market in Australia, single aged care assessments, the continued tender in the Ontario Employment Services market, where the largest tenders are still to come to market. And there's a myriad of large opportunities in the UK across education and the justice system and health going forward. Globally, there's a lot of opportunity for APM, and we'll be disciplined to ensure we're pursuing the right opportunities aligned with our core businesses, our capabilities and capacity, and ensuring there's a cultural and values alignment to drive sustainable growth. If we can move to slide 24, please. You may have heard us say this before, but when we embarked on the journey to become a listed company, we knew we were a market leader in health and human services. Our goal and plan is to deliver medium-term profit growth in the mid-teens, and we believe achieving this through all cycles is market leading. What this means is our ambition is to double the business over the next 5 years and to do this, we'll continue to invest in our people. This ambition also aligns to the introduction of underlying EPS targets in FY23 as part of the Future Management LTI Awards, with an entry threshold of 13% and a full target of 17%. We have an incredible market opportunity to achieve strong growth, and we can do this through all cycles as demonstrated in the past. As Megan has covered, we have supportive market conditions, a strong market position globally, and we have the best in industry team, and are well positioned to grow in emerging areas such as health, NDIS and aged care. Over the past few years, we've grown 55% organically and 45% from strategic accretive acquisitions, and we expect to see this trend continuing at a level of around 2/3, 1/3 over the medium term. The listing of APM was the start of a new chapter and not the end of the journey, and we're excited to continue this journey in partnership with our shareholders and deliver strong returns for our shareholders, our people, the clients we support and the communities we live in. In closing and before any questions, I'd like to thank the leadership team and all our team across the globe for everything they do each day and their continued dedication, commitment and passion for our clients and our purpose of enabling better lives. Thank you, and we'll open up for questions. Thanks, moderator.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star two. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question.
You ready?
The first question today comes from Michael Peet from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Megan, Mike, Stephen, Matt. Congratulations on the results. Just my first question is just around seasonality, just trying to get a sense of what going forward, and there's a big swing, particularly in Australia, first half to second half. Obviously, you've called out sort of corporate investment, integration of acquisitions and the impact from COVID that would have been on the face-to-face businesses there. But just trying to get a sense, maybe it's the Workforce Australia sort of ramp-up. Was there much from that that would have impacted fourth quarter OPEX? And just sort of got a sense for what seasonality, you know, is either a one-off or you know, permanent sort of changes.
Thanks, Michael. Look, I guess as we said, from an Australian perspective, the second half was impacted by, you know, the ramp up of Workforce Australia, investment in that. Obviously, the wind down of JobActive, and it was disruptive in terms of a wind down. The COVID-19 absenteeism, I think we can't underestimate that as borders opened and people, I guess, went into a world of continuing to live with COVID-19 with the Omicron virus, that we had significant absenteeism in terms of workers and clients. The acquisitions, as I said before, you know, bringing them on in the second half, but more importantly, integrating them and the costs associated with the integrations and our investment in corporate services. I think, you know, across the business, to be fair, this year has been unusual because I think people have been home locked or border locked for so long. So we did see also extended periods of people taking, I guess, leave and, you know, and being out of the market for longer than normal as the borders opened and they were able to start travelling and visiting family and the like. But that's not a normal seasonality that we expect, but it's certainly a seasonality that we experience in the FY20 year, particularly in Australia and Europe.
Okay, and maybe just on to the UK. I mean, there was a big step up, obviously Restart sort of hitting its straps. Is that, can we sort of annualise that going forward, that 37 in the second half, if we look at next year?
Yeah, I think the second half is a more more illustrative of a normal operating condition for the European business, subject to obviously other contract wins and opportunities that continue to come down the pipeline and we're executing on, particularly as we build that justice business in the rehabilitation space of justice rather than parole space of justice going forward, and look at new markets such as Sweden and continue to invest in that.
And just final question, back on Australia, I think there was meant to be a sort of mid-single digit contribution from the acquisitions in the second half, if I'm correct. But did they, I imagine they didn't hit that because of face-to-face disruptions. But is that a fair comment?
Yeah, that's correct. We didn't get the contribution from the acquisitions we expected because of the absenteeism, particularly across the health sector.
Great, thank you. That's all I've got for now. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tim Plume from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. I've got a couple of questions, but I'll just ask two and then jump back into the queue. But the first one, maybe if we could just talk a little bit more about that pipeline of opportunities, specifically the UK functional assessment. I think you mentioned this has been upsized, but how should we be thinking in terms of potential timing around that? And maybe if you could give a little bit more colour in terms of the Ontario future tender phases, timing and scale of the opportunities there, please.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. So the UK functional assessments tender, there has been a delay in that because what has happened is as the market's evolved, they've realised that they needed to increase the investment in that tender. So, you know, on the face of it, where we're sitting today is the size of the tender value has increased by about 25%. So I think it's over £3 billion at the moment. The process continues in terms of dialogue and, as you've probably heard me say before, they run quite an extensive process of dialogue and final offers and the like. So we're in that process now. So we don't expect that outcomes until the second half of this financial year in terms of outcomes, in terms of tender outcomes, with a start then in the third quarter of the 24 financial year is the timing that's currently estimated, but it's significantly larger than anyone expected, and we're working through that at the moment. In terms of Canada, so of course we've executed on the pilot program in Peel. We won the first phase, being York region, and so each region we've been at winning our maximum market share, which is one contract, so now we're in 2 of 6. Phase two bids are in process at the moment, and then there'll be a phase three process, which is a much larger process. So phase two and phase three are much larger than the phase one bids. So they're in progress as we speak. So that will continue to transition in terms of bids and then awards throughout the FY23 year. And then generally speaking with those contracts, what happens is you're in transition phase where you're preparing and getting ready for the contract. And then you're in implementation, which generally happens 6 months after the award of the contract. Does that cover your questions on those two, Tim?
Yeah, that's great. And then just the last question around costs and specifically labour costs. I mean, I know you mentioned that you've got the ability to kind of go back, but all else equal, how should we be thinking about maybe GP per like-for-like successful candidate placement? In the context of pricing increases and labour inflation, is it absolute dollar dilutive or less dollars per successful placement of candidate at the GP level, given the cost inflation that we've seen?
Tim, as we've seen, we've stood up Workforce Australia, which has been a 500-person recruitment on top of our existing staff in the last quarter of FY22. Restart, obviously, the last quarter of FY21 into the first quarter of FY22, 1,000 people. We've not seen an inability to attract the talent, and then two, an inability to maintain our cost structures in the employment area. So for us, we do have built-in protections in a number of our large contracts in terms of, I'll use the word inflation, but it's not the word that are used in the contracts, to give us some, I guess, support to ensure that all providers can maintain the services and maintain the level of staffing required to execute on the contract, because ultimately outcomes are what's important. So in terms of, I guess, if you want to talk about GP per outcome, we don't see that as being a factor that changes materially up or down in cycles, except for when you're starting a contract from scratch
and then I guess scaling it over time. It takes time to get to that, I guess, full productivity, optimum productivity.
And Tim, Matt Cooper here, if I can just use a real life example with FAS when you spoke about cost inflation and protection. So that increase in funding that Mike referred to, what that's specifically driving is it's covering inflation, and we all know inflation in the UK is high at the moment, but the contracts are actually covering for that. So that's a big part of why functional assessments has increased. The other big component is the focus on quality. So what the government realised through that bid process is that we need to, or what providers need to do, is make sure that the participants in the program are getting the quality service they require. So that funding increase that Mike referred to is actually a direct reflection of government's focus on quality and cost protection to make sure that the quality can be delivered.
That's really helpful, guys. I'll jump back into the queue to ask my other questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. The next question comes from Gretel Janu from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. Just firstly, in terms of the DES reallocation, of the 15,500 people that are to be reallocated, what is your expectation there in terms of market share gains that APM can achieve?
Thanks, Gretel. So there's 15,500 clients across 215 contracts. We currently have around about 18% of the market share. So we think that the way the reallocation works is initially the individual client will receives a letter. They get choice, because it's choice and control of where they go. But with that letter, they get here are the highest performing providers and their locations where they operate. So if they don't choose, then they're allocated to the highest performing provider in their region. So we think either way, we're really well placed given our performance and also our physical presence in markets. So we would, whilst 18% would be nice, that's not success for us. We think we should outperform that. However, that'll play out over the month of September.
Great, very clear. And then just in terms of DES, when is that contract up from renewal? From memory, I think it's next year, but there's the option to extend. And I guess just with the new government, has there been any change in rhetoric around that program and how it's structured?
So Gretel, in terms of the program going forward, yes, it's there's a next year is a, I guess, the end of the first term. What we see, and I think you've obviously seen in terms of the consultation paper released and the like, is we're seeing I guess strong support for the program. We think an extension is likely. That extension can be anywhere from 1 year to 5 years, or it could be progressively. The consultation paper talks about access to specialty disability employment providers, that it's important that it's a distinct program supporting people with disability. And I think the reallocation process certainly, and the strong words of the minister and government around that reallocation process, around the importance role of providers, regardless of status, and the importance of strong providers, and the fact that they're prepared to act and take out poor providers regardless of status. We feel that's the organisation we are. We're a high-performance organisation, delivers on its promises, invests in outcomes for the clients that we support, and ensures that we deliver on our contract promises. So we feel that there will be an extension of sorts, and whether that's 1 year, 2 years, not quite sure yet, but there's certainly good support for the program. And we're with the reallocation, we're really, I guess we feel comfortable with the direction this new government's taking it, and the fact that they're actually acting on what they need to act on, which is something we've been speaking about for many years.
And further to that, Gretel, there's commentary out there as well that there's advocacy groups that are suggesting that it would take at least 28 weeks to go through a full procurement process. And then further to Mike's note as well, the consultation that's happening at the moment and the market research that the government's undertaking, really that favours APM and we encourage it. So the more engagement with community for the reasons that Mike just described is a real positive for us.
Great, thanks guys. And then just last question, just trying to think about the organic growth into FY23. So what's been the most recent trends that you've seen in terms of caseloads and outcomes for DES, Workforce Australia and Restart just in July and August?
Yeah, thanks, Gretel. Look, obviously, starting the Workforce Australia contract, what happens is, you know, you've been given a client allocated market share and then you need to engage clients. I think one thing that our team have done an exceptional job at and is engaging clients, bringing them onto program, and I think we are one of the few providers that actually were open for business day one in all locations, fully staffed, with appointment books open, and there's still providers that haven't done that. So we're seeing really good client flow into the program. As we talked about last year, you know, we expected that the actual client numbers would be higher than initially estimated by government. We're certainly seeing that play out in terms of the volumes of clients into Workforce Australia to APM. So, you know, it's been a really good start. I mean, the article last week in the Australian newspaper, I think, says it all, and we've been saying that for a while, that ultimately there are so many more unemployed people than are reported in the data that's used during the election campaign and the like, and you know, there's a significant cohort that needs support in the programs that we execute on. I mean, I guess we're now seeing a lot more talk about the impact of long COVID on employment and the fact that in the USA there's 4 million people out of the workforce with long COVID. In the UK there's 2 million, in Australia it's 400,000 and growing. And there's going to be a big role to play there as well going forward. So there's a lot of momentum in the sector, and you know, we just need to continue to deliver on our promises and invest as the government needs our support.
Great, but I just want to confirm on that. So given that Australia is pretty much at full employment here at this point in time, are you still seeing caseloads currently above where they were last year?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, caseloads are a long way above pre-pandemic levels, absolutely. So caseloads are higher and there is still more caseload to come, we feel, especially out of the online system. And I guess we wait to see what the current government decides to do with that online system, especially given Albanese and co. continued verbal comments around, you know, put the human back into human services. So, yeah, that employment data that you quote, 473,000, I think, Australians unemployed, but in reality it's many times that figure, given that the unemployment data or the employment data says that if you work for 1 hour in a fortnight, you're fully employed in that employment data.
Understood. Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is a follow-up from Tim Plume from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. I might just throw one more in there. Mike, you mentioned the online component of Workforce Australia. Could you maybe give us a bit of a sense in terms of how big that cohort is relative to the overall program, please?
Tim, I'm just sort of, I think last time we spoke, those figures, I may get this wrong, were over 200,000 people were in the online program. And that number that sort of average number is continuing at the moment. Remembering that they stay in that program for 12 months unless they opt out into provider landscape. So we're currently seeing that. So it's 16% of the, about 16% of the total clients that are sitting in online.
Great. And just anything that the industry is doing at the moment in terms of maybe flagging to those candidates that they do have the option to opt out if they want to?
Look, at this stage, there's no, call it, campaign
saying to opt out. It's more right now it's discussions with the government around, you know, online, timing online, what it's doing in terms of creating a new cohort of long-term unemployed, and that early intervention and support is what drives participation in the workforce. So we're focusing on that at this stage. And I think the government is certainly hearing what the providers and the industry bodies are saying. So, of course, they've got a lot to digest, not just in our sector. So we're hoping that there'll be some positive movement going forward.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. At this time, we're showing no further questions. I'll hand the conference back to Michael for any closing remarks.
Thank you, moderator. Look, thank you for taking the time to join us on the call today. Look, we're really happy about the way the FY22 year's ended up. We're excited about the future and the opportunity ahead for us as an organisation. Thank you for your support. I know it hasn't been an easy journey as a shareholder over the past 6, 7, 8 months, but you know, this is a long game, and we look forward to partnering with you into the future. So thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.